The running time for this Rain Hamcast podcast is 19 minutes 32 seconds with a station ID break at 9 minutes 42 seconds. There are 5-second breaks to reset Echo Link and All Star timers about every 3 minutes.
Okay, you were interested in ham radio. You may even have gotten your license, but you never dove deeper into the hobby. Why not?
This is Rain Hamcast podcast number 76, posted October 1st, 2022. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Did you put up an outdoor HF antenna soon after you received your first ham call sign? A surprising number of hams haven't. Don Keith, N4KC, author of more than 25 books, has discovered this in recent years. As a result, he prepared a virtual talk he calls N4KC's Top 5 Getting on the Air Quick Antennas. Don shared his discovery in a virtual talk he prepared for the August 2021 QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo. Here is our first excerpt from that talk.
I'm Don Keith, N4KC. I was licensed at the age of 13. I've been a licensed ham since 1961, which means I've been a ham over half of the entire history of amateur radio. This presentation is entitled N4KC's Top 5 Get on the Air Quickly Antennas. Well, Get on the Air Quick Antennas. Grammatically correct, it should be quickly because that's an adverb, but I think it sounds better to say get on the air quick antennas. This entire topic actually started several years ago when I noticed I was running into a lot of people who had either gotten their license and never got on the air, or they had gotten their license and got on the air, but just really didn't find that the hobby was for them for various reasons. Or they were interested in ham radio, but they just never got around to getting a license or getting on the air. I decided to start asking questions and see if I could learn what kept them from diving deeper into the hobby, what kept them from catching the bug like you and I have and like so many have over the years. Why did they lose interest and go off someplace else? So I started asking if somebody indicated that they had been a ham or had thought about being a ham or became a ham and never got on the air or had a less than satisfactory experience. Okay, you were interested in ham radio. You may even have gotten your license, but you never dove deeper into the hobby. Why not? And I kept running across 4 or 5 answers that came up very, very often. One of those was just they were unclear or hesitant about how to put a station together. How much does it cost? I can't spend $10 million to become a ham radio operator. And especially with the advent of cell phones, what can this hobby do that my cell phone can't do? Knowing what to do on the air was also a big stumbling block. Once they got the license, they really didn't know where to go or what to do or what the various options were for them out there. You know, we old timers sort of take it for granted that people will dive in and get going and be as enthusiastic about learning new stuff as we were, but that's not necessarily the case. Knowing what to talk about. Okay, let's say I do get on the air with my brand new license. What am I going to talk to this new guy about? Because I know nothing about the hobby. I can barely describe what kind of radio I'm running and what kind of an antenna I put up, or I really don't know a lot about electronics, or maybe I know a lot about electronics, but I'm afraid my new acquaintance on the air won't. What do you talk about once you get on the hobby? The jargon. Our hobby is over 100 years old, and as with any other pastime, it's inevitable that the hobby will develop a lot of jargon, its own language. And the first thing you do is you turn on your 2-meter radio and you hear somebody say, well, I've destinated here at the QTH. I think I'll go in and see if the XYL has the old feedback ready. If she doesn't, I may go take a look on 17 and see if I can work the expedition because I need that for my DXCC. 73, what did I just say? If you're a brand new ham, you have no idea. The jargon is actually a very big stumbling block to a lot of people. But the one that kept coming up over and over and over again was putting up an antenna. That's why so many people, when they do take the plunge and actually take the license exam and typically end up here in the USA with a technician class license, the first thing most of the newcomers do is go out and buy an HT. And HT solves a lot of these questions. That little 2-meter handy talkie is a station already. It's got a receiver and a transmitter built in. They can listen to the repeaters and hopefully get a little idea of who is on there, what they're doing, what they talk about. Maybe pick up on some of the jargon, and you don't have to worry about an antenna because there's a little device on top of that 2-meter rig that, well, we call it a rubber ducky. Some of us call it a dummy load, little helical antenna that probably takes about 2/3 or 3/4 of the signal that you have available and burns it up. So the introduction into the hobby with that HT is not necessarily a good one. I decided to address this with several chapters in some of my books. Get on the Air Now is the one that actually addresses each one of these roadblocks. I also put together this particular chapter for several of the books and also did an article on it for the eham.net website, and it's still available there. It's also available on my ham radio website, n4kc.com. If you scroll to the bottom and take a look at the articles, you'll see one on the top 5 get on the air quick antennas. Well, first of all, this is my opinion of what the top 5 get on the air quick antennas are. And the criterion for my list, since this is my presentation, was that, first of all, it needs to be relatively simple to put up. Nobody wants to get out and have to do a whole bunch of tree climbing or tower building or that sort of thing as a brand new ham. Secondly, because of the situation most new hams find themselves in, it needs to be as stealthy as necessary. It does not need to be too obtrusive or something that will necessarily require approval by a homeowners association or a town engineer or anything like that. It should work reasonably well because the reason we're putting up this one of these antennas in the first place is because we want to overcome that objection that putting up an antenna is too much trouble, too difficult, and too dangerous. But we want it to give a good impression of the hobby. We want people to be able to make contacts with that antenna. It needs to be easy and inexpensive for even a rank newcomer who knows nothing at all about the hobby to be able to build or to buy it and put it up in a way that it will give that satisfactory experience. I can't tell you how many times I've heard new hams ask, you know, what's the quickest, easiest way I can get an antenna up and get on the air and start trying out that new license. I've heard old timers come back with, well, you need to go buy a bunch of aluminum and build yourself a beam. Or you need to put up a fan dipole. Well, a fan dipole may be a perfectly good antenna, but they're very, very pesky to try to get tuned right if you use it on multiple bands. In other words, they're giving advice that might apply to somebody who's been a ham for a long, long time. And remember, this is a total newcomer. And I assume a lot of you who are taking in this presentation fall into that category. It needs to be something that you can put up and do yourself. And inexpensive, I'll put a lot of emphasis on that with my choices for the top 5. And maybe just accidentally, these top 5 antennas will encourage a newcomer to be curious, to learn more about antennas, how they work, how you adjust, how you can use that antenna. And if you don't like it, you put up a second one. If it works better than the first one, you take the first one down. Or do like me and just keep putting up antennas. A bird cannot fly through my backyard without risking his life and limb. It's just the nature of falling in love with experimenting with antennas. If it encourages somebody to learn more, that's a good thing. That's exactly what happened to me. I was just trying to figure out how to get back on the air after a hiatus, and I had really not paid a lot of attention to antennas in the past, but once I did, I really got interested in how these things work, how to make them work better, and how to get a more satisfactory experience out of the hobby.
You're listening to N4KC's Top 5 Get on the Air Quick Antennas, a virtual presentation delivered during the August 2021 QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo by longtime ham and prolific writer Don Keith, N4KC. We'll continue Don's talk after this pause for station identification. This is Rain Hamcast Podcast number 76, for October 1st, 2022. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
This is the Rain Hamcast, available both on therainreport.com and YouTube.
Now, these are not in any particular order, by the way. It all depends on what your needs are, what your knowledge is, what your skill level is, how good are you with a screwdriver and a soldering iron. That'll determine which ones of these will fit best with what you want to do. Number one on the list, not necessarily in your hearts or in ranking order, is the plain old wire dipole fed with coaxial cable. The invention of the coax cable was one of the most wonderful things to happen to radio communications, and maybe also one of the worst. I'll mention those as we go along here. A dipole antenna is simply two pieces of copper wire, typically copper, because copper is a good conductor of electromagnetic energy. Each one of those two pieces of wire is 1/4 wavelength long for the frequency on which you intend to use that particular antenna. Thankfully, and you may have learned this when you studied for your license exam, there is a simple formula for determining how long the entire antenna will be. Then you just divide that by 2 to get the length of each one of those two pieces of wire. You take 468. I won't go into why that's the magic number for this presentation, but trust me, 468 divided by the frequency in megahertz. Therefore, if you are going to cut an antenna for pretty much the higher end of 75 meters, you might divide 468 by 3.95. Or if you want to cut it for the middle of the band for 3.9 or 3.8, divide that into 468. That'll give you a number. You divide that by 2, and that's the length of those two pieces of wire. In the middle, you have a center insulator. That center insulator can be one that's manufactured for the purpose of being a center insulator, and there are plenty of them out there. You'll see them at Hamfest or just about any place you want to look. You will also be able to make something. If you have something that's sturdy that you want to use that's non-conductive, it can be a center insulator. You don't want it to be too broad, too long, too wide. Inch or two would be fine. A couple inches would work just fine. And you will need an insulator at each end of the wire. And you string that up just like the little diagram right there shows you. Put the center insulator in the middle. You put the other two insulators on the ends. Then you use rope or something else, preferably non-conductive, to tie that to a couple of supports. That dipole antenna can also be an inverted V, where you will have a support in the middle. Then the other two wires will sag down to much shorter supports. You want to get that at least 6 or 7 feet off the ground so nobody gets into it. Or in my part of the world, you don't want anybody to, you don't want the deer to get their antlers caught in the wire on the ends. That's called an inverted V for obvious reasons, because the two wires form an upside down V. Then you will take a piece of coax. What kind of coax? Way beyond the scope of this presentation, RG58, RG8, LMR400, a lot of numbers and names that you can look for. If you're going to run considerable power, you probably want to use something larger like LMR400 for your coax. If you're not going to run more than 100 watts, and you're not going to have too long a run, and you're not going to use it on too high a frequency, you can use just regular old RG8X, which is pretty good coax for that sort of an antenna. You take the center conductor of that antenna and attach it to one of the wires at the center, and you take the outer shield on that coax and you attach it to the other wire, and you've got a dipole antenna. Now, one little caveat here, and I'm going to look at the pros and cons of each one of these antennas. A dipole is a balanced antenna. That should be fairly obvious. Both wires are the same length on either side of that center insulator. Coax is an unbalanced feed line. You're going to have a balanced antenna being fed by an unbalanced piece of feed line, the coax. So most people typically and wisely will use what is called a balun. That is a unbalanced transformer. And if you put that transformer between the connection to each each one of the wires at the top, and then you just put your coax directly to the output of the ballon, then you have accomplished changing over from a balanced antenna to an unbalanced feed line. And there at the center where the feed line attaches is the best place to do that. That will keep RF off the outside of the shield of the antenna in a lot of cases and feeding back into your shack and biting you on the lip when you touch the microphone on the radio. That is, number one, the wire dipole fed with coax. The pros of this antenna, it's cheap, it's easy, and I guarantee if you have trees or bushes around, it's almost invisible to your neighbors, maybe even to the spouse. I don't guarantee that. It only takes one or two supports. Supports on the ends would be two. It does not necessarily need a support in the middle, although a lot of people will put one there just for security's sake, especially if you're using a long run of heavy coax. If you only use one support in the middle and make an inverted V, you technically have supports on the end, but the height of those are not critical. This antenna will work quite well on the band for which you cut it, and it will also work quite well on the odd harmonics. So if you cut this antenna for 7.1 megahertz, the 40 meter band, it'll work pretty well on 15 meters. But unfortunately, most of our bands are no longer odd harmonics of each other. It may still work on those bands, but it won't be optimal because it's going to fall outside the actual ham band. The cons of this kind of antenna, the dipole, it really needs to be high above ground, at least a quarter wavelength, if you intend to work a lot of DX. If you're too close to the ground, you become a cloud warmer, as they call it. That actually has its advantages if you want limited area coverage with a good strong signal. But if you're intending to use this antenna for DX, you really do need to get it at least a quarter and preferably a half wavelength above the ground. If you happen to have it above salt water, that's a whole different situation. But most of us don't live on salt water. This antenna is somewhat directional. The pattern is going to resemble a figure eight with the nulls off the ends of the antenna. So you need to be sure you orient it in such a way that you're going to take advantage of that directional characteristic. If you're going to use the antenna on bands for which you didn't cut it, or for bands that are not odd harmonic bands, an odd multiple of the primary band that you cut it for, then you're probably going to require a tuner. And that tuner preferably needs to be at the feed point, which is raises a whole bunch of other issues that almost would disqualify this antenna, because getting a tuner out there at the feed point, getting that tuner power so it can do its thing automatically, that gets to be real complicated. The reason for all this is one of the negative things about coax is it is looking at a high standing wave ratio at the feed point. Then you're going to have quite a bit of loss coming back and going to the antenna of RF if it is not a resonant antenna. So for that reason, you either want a tuner at the feed point of the antenna, or you primarily only going to be able to use the antenna on its resonant band and the odd harmonic bands where it would also be close to resonance. Those are the negatives. To me, the positives still outweigh that because it is very simple and easy to put up and easy to keep up in the air, and it'll give you a good satisfactory experience.
This has been the first excerpt from a virtual talk delivered by Don Keith, N4KC, longtime ham operator and prolific author of more than 25 books. We'll bring you our second excerpt from his N4KC Top 5 Getting on the Air Quick presentation, given to the August 2021 QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo. Next time, RAIN founder Hap Holly, KC9RP, edits and produces this bi-weekly ham radio hamcast without monetization. Your support via PayPal and feedback on therainreport.com are both appreciated. Copyright 1985, 2022, RAIN. All rights reserved. RAIN programming is made available under a Creative Commons license. You are encouraged to download, share, post, and transmit the RAIN Hamcast in its entirety via amateur radio. Thanks to Tom Shimizu, N9JDI, for posting a not-for-broadcast version of these podcasts via the RAIN Report channel on YouTube. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming.